Hi everyone, and welcome to the first of three episodes of our series on genetic modification. My name is Age and I am part of the iGEM team from Amsterdam. In this podcast series, we will try to find out if genetic modification can be, or should be, part of a sustainable society. In this very first episode, we will discuss the possibilities for genetic modification in sustainability, and if sustainability can actually come from a technology like this. This episode will be in English, as we have an English-speaking guest. Dr. Zoe Robet is researcher in biotechnology and ethics. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you, Achu, for having me here.
Can you maybe first explain to us what genetic modification entails?
Okay, so there are different ways of understanding what genetic modification means, and there are different types, but I think the basic idea is that you have an organism which has a genetic code, and you will make a change in there. And then there are very different debates about, you know, what is gene editing, what is genetic modification, but I think the basic idea is that you either import a new gene from a related species or another organism, or you make some sort of change. So I think, to put it very simply.
I think this is pretty clear. So yeah, genetic modification can be done in all sorts of organisms, so plants, animals, whatnot.
But anything that has a genetic code.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, mostly anything that's alive.
Yeah.
So we focus in our research on bacteria. We also like to focus on that today in our podcast. And this technology of genetic modification in bacteria, do you think that this is a well-developed technology? Like, how far is this along?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, because there's a lot of potential to work with bacteria, because things happen much faster than with plants or with animals or other living organisms. And I think there's, at the moment, you know, on the industrial level, there's not so much done in terms of genetic modification and bacteria, because there are very stringent regulations about what you can do and what you can't do. For the few companies that do have applications in that field, like using bacteria to do things, I think they meet a lot of resistance. I now forget the name of the company, but one example was a company based in Brazil who would produce an algae oil that was produced from a modified bacteria.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of controversy around that, because they were producing an oil that would otherwise be exploited from nature, from palm oil, and then they would replace it with an algae oil. And it had a better life cycle assessment, but then there were a lot of critics that came, because first the argument was that it would displace labor from farmers to plant production in another country. And second, it said that, well, because it's using genetic engineering, it's not sustainable, it's not good for the environment.
It's not green, so
exactly.
To say.
And then that's the case that colleagues of mine, Dirk Stemmerding and Lotte Asfeld, wrote a very nice report about that you can find on the website of the Rathenau Institute on the Ecover case. And the interesting thing is that then the debate went around what is genetic modification, because then the company said, oh, wait, we're not doing genetic engineering. We're just doing a few tweaks, and then it's producing this algae oil. So then you see a lot of debates that come. So how you define something is very important for how it's going to be handled by the public and by policymakers and consumers and all the other important stakeholders. So that's one example. I'm talking about this example to say that there are not a lot of examples that to look at. But I think the iGEM competition is a really good place to look at a lot of possibilities of what could be done in terms of using genetic modification in bacteria and what could come out of there. Just all the ideas that you guys put on the table.
Yeah. So if you look at technologies like this, and also in the example you just gave, do you think there's a general goal to the modification of genes in bacteria? Like, does this technology have a certain aim?
That's an interesting question. I think it could have any aim you would want it to have, because it's more like an idea of giving an organism a function to do something, right? So you will use modification as a means to reach a certain goal. So So your goal might be to produce a component, your goal might be to capture components, your goal, I'm saying components, but I mean anything that it could interact with. Your goal might be to recognize something, and these are all functions you can give to the bacteria. So goals are very broad and can be achieved through different functions, which is why it's so interesting for scientists and engineers to work with genetic modification in bacteria, because it's so versatile.
Yeah, so it's actually very broad and very versatile.
Yeah.
Where would you then expect to see this technology a lot in, say, 50 years when it has developed further?
I think one big trend is rapid diagnostics, because I think that's one kind of thing that people can deal with, in the sense that they see the immediate use, like that you can do something you used to do before, but faster and cheaper. And that's kind of a narrative that makes it very easy to convince people that this is a good idea. But another trend you see is with this giving function to a bacteria, you can do things faster and cheaper, but you can also do things you couldn't do before. Or you can do things you were doing, but in a completely different way. So there are very different paths in which you can see trends that will develop, and that really will depend on political support, regulation, interest from citizens, and a lot of things, and what kind of application and what kind of goal you're trying to reach. And I think we have big challenges in our societies, and these technologies, all technologies, come to help us deal with these challenges. But the question is, how do we decide to deal with these challenges, and what do we want from technologies in general, and specifically from genetic modifications in bacteria?
Yeah, so now you name rapid diagnostics, and the example you gave before, it also touched upon like being sustainable and green, and that's actually what we also want to talk about in this podcast, so sustainability. And then actually the first question I would have is, what are we trying to achieve when being sustainable? Is that a goal in itself, or what's the...
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's perhaps the trickiest part, where you come to look at genetic modification and in bacteria and sustainability. So that's kind of when I was talking of the different ways, do something faster, better, cheaper, do something you couldn't do before, and do something that you can do, but in a much better way. And better is kind of open for interpretation, right? So better for whom, better for what? So sustainability, it's a very big word. And you see in politics, it's been worked out as sustainable development goals. And you see goals in very different areas. You see goals in food and health, in education, agriculture, fighting poverty, having a better environment. And there are many ways to shape the idea of sustainability or to implement it. Now, I want to maybe bring it back to the roots. So sustainability, it comes a bit, well, one of the first kind of policy definitions was from the Brundtland Commission in the 80s. And then the definition was, sustainable development is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. And that's a very interesting thing to just, you know, bring it back to this sense of what are we doing today and how it is impacting tomorrow. And there are different ways to work it out. And I think the primary idea was really coming from nature. So looking at nature and how we can not destroy our planet.
Yeah.
But then it was such a kind of a nice idea to say, okay, we want things to be able to sustain themselves, to not, you know, be depleted, and that goes for different things. So now it's really considered in terms of economic sustainability, cultural sustainability, environmental sustainability. There was a fourth one that I now just forget. But so people, planet, profit kind of idea.
Yeah. So...
Social.
So basically, you would say sustainability just means that something that we are doing or some process can go on without leading to problems for future generations.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so you also talked about nature, and is preserving nature then something that would be sustainable? Like, is in sustainability, do we aim to preserve nature as it is now?
Yeah, I think that's one of the interpretations of sustainability. So the idea is that we gain a lot from exploiting nature, you know, for our well-being as humans. So if we deplete it, then we leave nothing for future generations. So the idea of preserving nature, it's maybe preserving has this idea of like freezing in time. It's more about sustaining that what we have keeps on coming back so that we can continue enjoying it in the future. Otherwise, we leave a planet with things that we enjoyed for our well-being, but our future, you know, societies won't be able to enjoy. So I think it's a more dynamic idea of preservation. So you would meet other people who would really see the idea that we cannot touch nature, you know, we shouldn't exploit it. But I think there's a different interpretation that says, well, we're exploiting it for our well-being and we need to exploit it in a caring way that we don't destroy it. That it's kind of a symbiosis kind of idea.
Yeah, so here you already need to say that it's not necessarily freezing as it is now, because that is, to make it a bit more explicit, often the problem that is seen by activists, for example, or Greenpeace, organizations like that, they say, well, in genetic modification, we change nature or natural processes, natural organisms. So we're changing nature and we're not sure if we'll change it forever, maybe.
Yeah.
And we don't know how this will influence nature or what will happen.
Yeah.
So we cannot be sure that this comes back, like this is just sustainable.
Yeah. Well, it's about different interpretations of what that means. And I think in that sense, nobody is wrong about their interpretation. It's more what happens next. And, you know, changing, I think it also depends how you understand what nature is and what our relationship to nature is. So a lot of people see humans as outside of nature. Some others see us as part of nature. And just the way you start thinking about that will influence the way you will understand what it means to be sustainable. And the example you mentioned is a bit the idea of the precautionary principle. There's very different interpretation of that principle. So one extreme is if you don't know enough about that technology, then you shouldn't use it until you know what it's going to do. And the other extreme is that if we think that technology might help us achieve a goal that is good for society, then we should use it. So these are really like two extremes of one same principle. And that's the difficult thing about these ideas, like the precautionary principle, sustainability, is that it says something to a lot of different people, but not necessarily the same thing. So it has different implications. But yeah, I think it's about finding a balance between these things and coming from understanding what different people want and trying to make compromises in the way we design technologies. And the way we design technologies has to do with the technology itself, like what kind of characteristics could a technology have to answer these worries or these wishes of different groups, but also what kind of institutions around the technologies could deal with these issues. So that's also something that we look at a lot in my research group, the idea of designing for values.
How you design and maybe having safety and stuff like that in there.
Yeah.
Safety is also something we will talk about in the third episode of our podcast, but
nice.
Now we'll I will go back a bit to the sustainability part. So you said you have this precautionary principle, where people are more cautious, or more the other end of the spectrum, where people say, okay, if we think there's any benefit in it, we should do this.
Yeah.
You say we should strike a balance. Do you have personally, not necessarily as a researcher, but for you personally, have a preference, like a direction where you lean more towards?
I think it's really context dependent. Like I cannot really, I don't want to say in general, because I think every innovation and every, you know, bacteria you would present me with a certain function would have a different context. And for me, it would be about assessing that. And then I could, you know, say, okay, well, then I would personally lean towards that. But I also wanted to add something, because designing for values, you could see sustainability as a value. So you can also think about how you design for sustainability. And that's very challenging, but it's very exciting.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, you know, if for me it's about starting early on, to answer your question about which way would I lean, I would lean towards saying, well, from early on we need more collaboration and more engagement of a design team that will try to find out where their innovation is going to go and what it's going to do. And let's say if it's an innovation that looks specifically at sustainability, what kind of design requirements you can come up with for sustainability. And I think if you can also make that explicit, it makes it easier to talk about it with people. Because then you don't just have, hey, look at my bacteria, it can do X and it's good. You can say, hey, look at my bacteria, it can do X and it's good because we looked at this and then we decided to do that, and we looked at that and we decided to do that. And you can also say, well, there are some things that we kind of call to the regulators, to politics, to address because it's out of our spectrum as designers. There are some things that we call for citizens to think about because it's out of our spectrum as designers. And it's about really pointing out who can do what and who maybe should do what.
So you do think that a technology, for example, genetic modification in bacteria, can definitely be designed for sustainability?
Yeah, definitely.
So then we are changing in nature a little bit, but so in my eyes sometimes I see, okay, why should changing nature be such a big problem if the nature we see today is also an outcome of the processes we influence by humans or by other pressure?
Yeah.
So how do you see that, like this preservation of nature, what's then actually the nature we want to preserve, or what's the value in that?
That's a very good question. I think there are different worldviews about nature. So there are people who see it as something we use. There, like I said earlier, there are people who see it as something like we shouldn't, you know, harming or exploiting. Yeah, I'm not sure I know what to answer to this. I mean, I think, you know, people have personal opinions about it. I think my answer would be to be open to hearing the arguments of why other people think in a different way and what you can learn from that. Not learn in terms of maybe changing your own opinion about how you see nature, but learn in terms of understanding what the needs of people who have a different opinions are, what their needs are. And yeah, I mean, we already do a lot of intervention in our nature. I mean, there is very few pristine areas in the world, and that's something that also I think should be discussed more, as to what we understand or we want to understand as nature. I mean, you see politically you have nature areas, right?
Yes.
That are not natural because they're heavily managed. Yeah. And they're, so if natural is the lack of intervention of humans, then I don't know, maybe some small part of the South Pole or something like that. But then maybe we need a more dynamic definition of nature, or yeah. But I think it's not about something is wrong or right. I think it's about understanding what we want to do and how we want to do it.
So going back to the genetic modification can lead to sustainability, or can be designed for sustainability, do you also think that it would lead to more efficient or effective ways for sustainability?
Yeah, definitely. I think there are opportunities there. So, I mean, if we look at biofuels and we look at how these biofuels are produced, you use, for instance, residues for agriculture, and they need to be transformed into something you can use as fuel. And this, they need to be transformed in. There is a lot of opportunity for genetic engineering here. But that, again, it assumes you would think biofuels is a good thing for sustainability, which is not a given, because of those different understandings of nature and what sustainability means. So I think one of the big problems in terms of, you know, using new technologies on for that is that people have very different ideas about this topic. So it makes it difficult to say this is sustainable, because another person will be saying, no, this is not sustainable because it doesn't correspond to my idea of nature and sustainability. So it's a very tricky topic.
That's true. So, for example, biofuels, the example you gave, then you could say this is sustainable because we make fuel from something else than oil. So, basically, from the energy that the plants or the algae that made it got.
Yeah.
And how would you then argue that it's not sustainable?
Well, you could argue that's where the different dimensions of sustainability come in, because you could look at the social and cultural perspective or the economic perspective, and there you could find things where some people maybe are at disadvantage in terms of economic benefits. You could find some people who think that, you know, we should just plant for food and not for fuel. There's a big food versus fuel debate, and that has to do with also the social aspects. Also cultural, what's the role of farmers in our society? So if, you know, it depends how you set it up. If you say we only use residues of agriculture, so things that are not there yet, that are not used for anything at this point, then that makes it a bit more easy to discuss, but still difficult, you know. So if you think of other example, you could have, you know, technologies that recapture nutrients and bring them back to the soils, because nutrient depletion is a big issue. And that's really not sustainable the way we do agriculture now, because we lose a lot of soil nutrients. But then you would be releasing modified bacteria in the environment. And then the question is, well, what will happen if there are some transfers that happen, or if the bacteria doesn't behave to do the function? So, yeah, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered just from an empirical basis to understand what's happening. And that's the difficult part, because it's like you have to start somewhere, but the starting somewhere is very difficult.
You have to strike this balance between the precaution and progression. So when genetic modification can lead to more sustainable ways, would you also say that it's a necessity for sustainability?
I think it's always about looking at the alternatives and the portfolio. So I'm not a big fan of like very strong statements, you may have noticed. And I think it's really context dependent. So if considering the alternatives and considering what people need and want, it comes out as the most desirable option, it doesn't mean it's perfect on all counts, you know, then I think, yeah, we should go for it. But I think it's about a process of looking at alternatives, looking at what people want, and also being ready to say, well, maybe for that case, it's not the best option. And maybe in another case, it would be the best option. And for me, it's about not being dogmatic about the role of biotechnology and sustainability, but it's about being open to the opportunities and the limitations. And limitations can come from the technology itself, can come from the political, social, and cultural context. And all of these things are valid. And that's very challenging, I think, for scientists, because there's a lot of really good work being done, a lot of really good ideas, but the reality is that this work will go outside the lab. And if you care about the success of your bacteria, you have to care about how it's going to be entering the real world. And yeah, something like that.
So in conclusion, we could say that this technology is indeed very promising, but you have to look at its place in society.
Yes. I can agree with that statement.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks everyone for listening, and keep an eye on our Facebook page, which is iGEM Amsterdam 2017, for the next episode. In that episode, we'll talk with Peter Mooy about algae and the bio-based economy.